Welcome to Ed Show episode 70. I'm Simon Perryman.
And I'm David Tessar.
You beat me, David.
That's
you
right.
jumped in there.
That's right. I got to say my own name.
But we have to jump in fast because we have a lot of news today before we go to an interview talking about our storage enhancements in Virtual Machine Manager 2012 R2. So David, kick it off. Tell us about Windows 8.1.
Well, in case you've been living in a cave, you may have heard of Windows 8.1. We had the announcements right at the previous Tech Ed and Build, and we now have the 8.1 Enterprise Preview, which if you're an enterprise looking to deploy Windows 8, I think 8.1 really addresses your major concerns. There are some features that are consumer enhancements there, but the bulk, I would say, of what's in 8.1 is for enterprises to deploy. One of the things I know a lot of people have had issues with, hey, the usability, I'm not sure, people don't have a start button, we fixed that.
So is there a stop button coming back?
There's a start button now, if you want it. But the big thing is, as an enterprise, you can control what that experience looks like. You can push some group policies down, start button, no start button. You have the ability to really lock down, customize things, so you can kind of minimize those users who are not more agile in learning new stuff.
Right.
Take advantage. And there's a lot of other stuff too, right? I mean, there's like VDI, so if you're doing any kind of VDI deployment, there's a lot of performance enhancements there. Branch cache, and as of usual, the enterprise sideloading is what you get with the enterprise version of the client. And then, there are some other cool things too, like the click to VPN connection automatically. So for instance, if you have a corporate application and you click on that app, you can then, it'll automatically know that app needs a VPN connection and seamlessly behind the scenes just connect up to your corporate network. And workplace join, pretty cool stuff, right? So your machine doesn't even need to be joined to the domain, and you have control over it via the new OpenMDM. You have that registered in Active Directory, so you can have some visibility into it, kind of enabling that whole, people-centric IT, as we like to call it.
Great. Thanks, David. Well, if you want to learn more things on the IT pro side, we want to let you know about one of our upcoming jump starts happening Thursday, August 1st. And this is Advanced Tools and Scripting Using PowerShell, hosted by Jeffrey Snover, really one of the primary engineers and inventor of PowerShell, along with Jason Helmick. Now, this is a live event, but if you miss it, you still have the opportunity to go view it online about a week later from the Microsoft Virtual Academy.
Yeah, and if you haven't actually watched or if you're going to watch this one, right, great. But what I would highly recommend is going to watch their first one. So their kind of primer on Windows Azure is an awesome one-day course. Received some of our highest ratings that we've gotten on our MVA courses. And it's, even if you know some stuff on PowerShell, it's an awesome kind of cram it all in there, learn all the new stuff, get a solid foundation to move to the advanced course, and that's now live on the MVA.
That is right. Getting started with PowerShell 3.0 Jumpstart, now available on the MVA. But that's not all. We've released a lot of courses over the past few weeks. We've also released What is New in System Center 2012 R2 Jumpstart. So that was hosted by myself, joined by Kenan Owens, Juan Hu, Brandon Matheson, and Bradley Buzz to really kind of cover the core capabilities of System Center 2012. And then also spent about an hour introducing the Windows Azure Pack, which allows service providers to offer Azure-like services and self-service capabilities directly on Windows Server. So this is now available on the MVA. But that is not all. We've continued to improve our System Center courses and provided one of the more popularly requested topics on System Center 2012 extensibility. So this is essentially looking at how you can go and customize your System Center 2012 deployments. So looking at building service templates using Virtual Machine Manager, integration packs with Orchestrator, management packs and dashboards with Operations Manager, and then service catalogs as well as data warehouse and reporting using System Center Service Manager.
So would you say that this is geared more for any kind of enterprise that already has a System Center infrastructure, or would you say this is maybe more towards an ISV type of person trying to develop custom stuff on top, or either?
I think it could work for either. A lot of these large shops, they have their custom applications, right? I need to go and create automation for my own ticket system. I need to go create automation for my own personal product. So there's definitely a good use for enterprises if they have their own development team. However, if you're an ISV building add-ons, building management packs, great opportunity to get some kind of core training there as well. So I definitely see that being useful for both of those parties.
Okay, cool.
Now, continuing along our System Center 2012 components released on the Jumpstart, we actually have two more Jumpstarts that we've just made live on the MVA. This next one is how to build a private cloud with Windows Server and System Center. So I hosted this one again, joined by one of our MVPs, Pete Zerger. And this essentially looks at building up the fabrics and then spends a lot of time looking at Service Manager, building up our service catalog and providing self-service to our end users to really be able to request any type of infrastructure or really any type of IT service offering. That was part one of the course. A couple days later, we did part two, also now released to the Microsoft Virtual Academy, which really focused on the transition from the private cloud model over to the hybrid cloud model. So really looking at the interaction with your on-premise data center using System Center, and then being able to scale out to Windows Azure for monitoring, management, and operations, automation, and a variety of other great integration points between our public and off-premise service offerings.
So if people maybe already have a System Center and they are looking to extend to the cloud, they could just jump right into this and know how all those connection pieces
Exactly. So it's really looking at how you can use Operations Manager to monitor your applications in Azure on-premise, backing up to Azure using DPM, automating Azure pieces using Orchestrator, and then finally using VMM or App Controller to go deploy applications, scale out on that public cloud as well.
Yeah. Definitely a lot of ways to connect System Center. You can pick and choose what you want to connect up based on your business need for Windows Azure, most definitely.
Well, speaking about Azure, we've just released a bunch of updates. Why don't you tell us about what's came out in July?
We did. There are quite a few updates in the service. If we go to Scott Guthrie's blog, who announced these things, one of the things, if you haven't heard about it, is called Traffic Manager. For those of you who are in the portal, you may you haven't seen it until now. And really what that's there for is to load balance services or traffic internationally, right across data centers. So for instance, if you want to have a highly available application inside your enterprise, you could have it across all six data centers. You could throw it at Traffic Manager in front of it. Traffic Manager, based on wherever that client's coming from, could then automatically route that request to the most performant service inside your organization. That's been available for a long time, but now it's surfaced inside of the console. So for those of you who say, what is this? Well, that gives you a little idea of what that is. Also, what we have is, and this is huge, we acquired Metrics Hub some time ago, and we've really started to put that into the Windows Azure service in production, and that's exactly what we've done with things like autoscale and monitoring. So, for instance, if you want to autoscale either a platform as a service or even infrastructure as a service in your VM based on a number of counters, you can set those variables and automatically you're going to scale up or down based on a number of criteria that you have inside of your environment. Obviously, this is really important if you want to save costs, as well as, takes the guessing work out of, you trying to do some back-end scripting or something else like that, right? It's going to allow you to really, scale up, scale down, save money for your organization, and not have to worry about, if that, your company goes viral or some, big thing that's coming up, you have all the options to schedule the scaling or, based on demand for what you need, as well as monitor the resource utilization in your environment. So that's one thing. The other thing that we released is some improvements inside the virtual machine interface to Quick Create. And this was one of my frustrations a little bit. It was that, when you used to be that, when you'd go into the create a Quick VM, and if you already had a cloud service that was up there, you had your custom name, mycoolcloudservice.cloudapp.net for your VMs. If you want to go create a new VM via the GUI, you used to not have the option to say, I want to join it to my cool cloud, service.cloudapp.net in the existing console. You can now do that via the drop-down box. So you can just join new VMs via the Quick Create instead of having to use PowerShell to do so. So that makes life a bit easier there. for you. And, you know, there's always going to continue to be improvements inside of Windows Azure. You know, that's why we're calling it the July update. So just keep staying tuned, as well as, you know, of course, tune into the episodes that I do on Windows Azure, because, you know, we'll dive deeper into the various things here. So, yeah.
Great. Thanks, David. Well, that's a lot of news that we've covered already. So let's jump over to our interview. And I'm going to be joined by Hector to talk about what's new in Virtual Machine Manager Storage. Thanks, David. Welcome back to The Edge Show. I'm joined today by Hector, and we're going to be looking at one of the major investment areas that we made with System Center 2012 R2 Virtual Machine Manager, specifically focusing on storage. But first of all, Hector, why don't you introduce yourself?
Thank you. Again, my name is Hector Linares. I'm a program manager with the Virtual Machine Manager team. I primarily focus on storage management with Windows and Windows Server integrated with VMM.
Thanks. So tell me, what are the major investments that Virtual Machine Manager has made with the 2012 R2 release?
I would say that some of the major investments we've worked on first starts with fundamentals. We wanted to make sure that VMM was scalable, reliable, and we had the best way, best throughput around jobs support. Now, we also invested on integration with Windows Server. So we are sim shipping with Windows Server. That means that Windows Server ships, VMM, and System Center will actually support the latest version of Windows. So that was a great engineering effort on around planning and execution. So that tight integration was another key component. And so with that comes all of the integrated storage, all the integrated features. Okay. One of them, for example, scale out file server with spaces, fully managed by VMM. Network virtualization, network gateways, et cetera, all managed by VMM.
Great. So I know that with this release, we spent a lot of time really trying to simplify the storage administration experience for our end users. Can you speak a little more about, you know, some of these investments that we've made?
So from a storage management perspective, we wanted to streamline management of large-scale enterprise arrays, whether they're Fibre Channel or iSCSI. We wanted to automate Fibre Channel switch management, especially in the context of virtual HBA, which is a new feature in Hyper-V that's supported in 2012. And then we also wanted to do an end-to-end integrated story around scale-out file server. Now, scale-out file server has the benefit of supporting SAN-based storage, iSCSI LUNs, Fibre Channel LUNs, and also spaces. Spaces is a technology in Windows Server that allows you to take a bunch of physical disks in a JBOD, right, and then group them into what's called a storage pool, and from there you can create a space. That storage can be used for a scale-out file server.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the scale-out file server. So, I mean, a scale-out file server is essentially a cluster, multiple server nodes, and each of them have a client access point on them. So, whack, whack, my share, whack, whack, my share, you know, spread out across these different nodes. How does this help our virtualized environment? What are the major benefits of running your VMs and storing them across this distributed scale-out file server?
Okay. So, from a scale-out file server, once you put these servers into a cluster, you actually get a unified namespace. So you can have one space, one, you know, disk, virtual disk, that then gets presented as a scale-out file share. Now that file share is available in every node of the cluster. So first you get the benefits of scale-out. So if you add another node to the cluster, you can distribute more shares across.
So this essentially helps distribute the traffic, so not everybody's going to a single node and through that SAN path, right?
Exactly, right. Yeah. So now the second thing is the fact that you can get transparent failover. So in the event that a node fails, obviously you're in a cluster, the backend space is actually has a CSV on it. So it's available in all nodes of the cluster. So when a node goes down, your clients, your Hyper-V servers, don't see the impact. They basically transparently fail over.
VMs continue to run, and on the back end, we redirect the client access path.
Exactly.
So you can have a failure of that share, but again, the VM doesn't fail, the VM stays online.
Exactly.
So it's essentially providing distributed access and high availability for our back end storage, is that right?
That's correct. And one more piece I would mention in R2, some of the innovations in file server is that now all the clients will actually follow the file server that has best access to the disk. So for example, if you have a three-node scale-out file server cluster and you have three spaces, clustering will actually distribute two spaces to every node automatically. And then all of the clients will follow the best path. So you'll get an even distribution of both clients and spaces underneath.
Oh, very nice. Well, I know that this scale-out file server, that was introduced in Windows Server 2012 RTM. Now, what's changed in System Center 2012 R2? How are we taking advantage of this underlying scale-out file system?
Okay, so we supported scale-out file servers in SP1 of VMM, and we actually just integrated with the the scale file server APIs. Okay. Now we've gone a step further and actually integrated support for Spaces. Now, Windows delivered a cluster-aware Spaces provider. Essentially, it gives us one view of the cluster and all of the pools and all of the spaces for that scaled file server. And so now we can discover physical disks in the context of that cluster. We can create pools, clustered pools, and then we can create a clustered space. And from there, we can stand up a CSV and then create the file share.
Can we actually see this in action?
Absolutely. So
now this is Virtual Machine Manager that we're looking at here, right?
Yes, right here you've got the VMM console. It's in the Fabric view, so this is essentially what the Fabric administrators or the full administrators would see.
Okay.
So under the Fabric workspace, there's a storage area. Under storage, you'll see file servers. So this is where you would see a file server come in after you add the provider. Now the provider is not the file server. It's actually our entry point from a management perspective. From the provider, we then get to talk to other components. So we first add a provider into VMM, and the way you would do that is in the ribbon, there's an Add Resources button, and then click on Storage Devices. From Storage Devices, you can tell VMM, go look for a Windows-based file server, I will hit Next, and then from there, you can give it an IP address, an FQDN, et cetera, with some credentials, and we're gonna go off and discover that file server. So once that discovery is done, you'll get a file server under management in VMM.
And so this is one that you've already added here with three nodes, is that right?
This is actually the file shares.
Okay.
So if I wanted to see the nodes,
I'll
click on the file server and then go to properties in the ribbon. From properties, I can click on cluster nodes. Right now, I don't have any under management because I haven't deployed the agent to these, but there's essentially two nodes in here.
Okay.
So that's where I would see the nodes, and if I want to manage the actual storage. So after we add this under management, we have to do a physical disk discovery. So that's already been done. So what do you see once the physical disk discovery is done? You can click on Manage Pools at the top of the ribbon. And here I've already got a pool created. I can click on New Pool, and I've got a set of disks. These are physical disks that are attached. These are shared disks attached to all the nodes of the cluster. And now I can create a pool from these disks. So essentially, I would click some number of disks. Let me start with 5. I'll give this a name. And I'll call it, let's say, my Platinum Storage. So when I hit Create, once I commit this, a job will actually kick off, and then the pool will get created.
Now, I noticed you had an option for CSV for clustered shared volumes. Will this convert these disks to CSV? Yeah. Are they already CSV?
Actually, so let me show you that view. So if I switch over to my actual cluster, so here is the actual failover cluster view and the computer management view, the disk manager, right? So I've got a bunch of disks there. What I want to show you here is that under storage pools, I've got my second demo pool. All right, so key thing to notice here is then also how many disks I have. So I've got VM store 01, 02, and 03. I'm going to go back into VMM and then actually create a file share. And that's going to stand up the space, a CSV, and then a file share.
Okay.
So from the scaled file server, I will right click. In the ribbon, I'll click on Create File Share. I will pick the scaled file server. I can give it a name. So we'll do VM Store 04. I'll pick the pool that I want, demo pool. I'll give it a particular classification. I can give it the same classification or a different one. And that's a new feature in R2. I can give it a size and I can pick my file system. The recommendation today is to continue using NTFS for the scaled file servers and I'll hit Create. When I switch back to the cluster view, we actually now end up orchestrating all of the steps under the covers. So you'll see a space actually get created. It'll pop up as a cluster resource. Once it's a cluster resource, we'll make it a CSV. And then once it's a CSV, we'll then create the file share.
And just to clarify, you did use the word orchestrate. We're not actually using System Center Orchestrator. This is all run entirely using VMM, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
These are our workflows integrating or talking to all these different components.
Right. Now, you know, I know that a lot of our customers, especially as they're kind of getting to these larger systems, scaling out, trying to get towards this private cloud model, they're using different storage vendors. You know, they might use Dell, Hitachi, EMC. And one of the challenges that they're facing is these different storage management components, you know, having to learn these different solutions. What have we done to really try to simplify that management and just try to make it easier to, let's say, deploy a new LUN, regardless of the underlying storage?
So what we've done in the platform is what's called Storage Management API. This is essentially a WMIV2 provider that ships in-box. It's actually shipped with Windows Server 2012 RTM, and we've enhanced it as part of R2. And this is the central storage management API that you can use with an EMC array, a NetApp array, a Hitachi array. We can also use it for example, the Microsoft iSCSI Target.
Okay.
Right. It's a software iSCSI Target that ships with Windows. That's managed by SMAPI as well. In addition to that, spaces. So what I just did here of creating a space, clustering, creating a pool, etc. All of that is done through storage management API. So the investments that we've made over the last two releases is to streamline management into the storage management API so that you can cover the wide range of devices that could exist in a data center.
Okay, well, that's going to be really helpful for a lot of our customers, just simplify that management overhead. Correct. Now, another thing that they've also been asking a lot about is Hyper-V replication. So, you know, Hyper-V Replica, for those unfamiliar, it's essentially an inbox replication solution. It's asynchronous, but it allows us to copy our VHD or VHDX files from one data center to another. So kind of an inbox disaster recovery solution. Now, since we're essentially managing VMs, managing storage, what kind of integration do we have with, you know, being able to go and configure replication, orchestrate it, manage it?
Okay. So at TechEd Europe, we actually announced what's called Hyper-V Recovery Manager. This is a service that lives in Azure and essentially offers orchestrated disaster recovery that integrates with VMM on the primary and secondary site and also integrates with Hyper-V Replica. So essentially using VMM as the management engine and then Hyper-V Replica as the replication engine, we actually, HRM actually offers orchestrated disaster recovery. So failover, failback, test failover, and especially when there is an actual disaster and maybe your primary is down, you can do what's called an unplanned failover where you assume nothing's on a primary and you just want to push everything over to the secondary.
Great. And so how exactly does this tie in here?
Okay. So what you do when you sign up for the service, so first you have to sign up for the service. It's currently in preview. So when you sign up and you get accepted, you will download a plugin. And then from the plugin, you'll install it on your primary and your secondary
VMM. This is a VMM plugin, right?
Right, on the VMM server. It's not a UI plugin. It's actually, it attaches to the service. And so once it's installed on the primary and the secondary, you can then start pairing clouds. So that it's actually pretty cool because it's not about a VM, Hyper-V host to Hyper-V host. It actually presents VMs through a cloud. So if I have, for example, my marketing cloud in my primary site, I would create an equivalent marketing cloud in my secondary. And then I would, if I have a VM presented through the cloud, let's say I'm a self-service user, I've deployed a VM in there, now I want to protect it. I would right-click, enable protection. And then the workflow would start to actually enable protection to ensure that it can fail over and fail back that VM.
Very nice. That's great to see that integration built in. Now, one of the other big popular Hyper-V topics coming out of Windows Server 2012 R2 is shared VHDX files. Essentially, that's allowing our guest clusters to use basically file-based storage instead of, you know, presenting a virtualized fiber channel or iSCSI or one of those. Could you really explain to us what are the key benefits and how can we go and integrate that within VMM?
Okay. So from a shared VHDX perspective, you're essentially looking at abstracting storage, shared storage, from the underlying infrastructure and presenting the capability up to your tenants, especially if you're a hoster.
So coming in the hoster service provider type scenarios.
Exactly. Essentially,
right?
Hosters, and in some cases, some enterprises, they don't exactly want their customers to have direct access to the SAN, mm-hmm. right? Because it's possible through VMM that you can actually orchestrate, for example, a virtual HBA with a fiber channel LUN. So that's all that you can orchestrate that through VMM. But if you don't have the technology in the back end, or if you want to be able to segregate or decouple the two, you can have fiber channel to your Hyper-V servers or fiber channel to your scale-out file servers or maybe JBots to your scale-out file servers, and then layer on top of that your shared VHDX that goes directly to the VMs. So you get the abstraction, you get the security as well.
So how can somebody go and actually deploy a shared VHDX file using VMM?
Okay, so actually pretty simple. So I'll show you in the console.
Even better.
Let me switch over now to the library view, and we're going to look at templates.
Okay.
So if you look at a VM template, I've got a few already created. I've got one called shared VHDX template. In the ribbon, I'll click on properties.
And essentially, a template is a collection of the different properties that are going to make up that VM.
That's
what
right.
goes in the guest operating system? What's the virtual hardware configuration, like virtual networks, virtual storage, memory, that type of
yep,
stuff?
Yep, it's the model or the blueprint. of all the VMs you want to stamp out from there.
I mean, this is a good best practice as well as we think about these private cloud concepts of standardization, right? We build it once per failure, we get to redeploy it the same way every time to avoid that misconfiguration.
That's correct.
So great best practice here. Yep.
So in the properties, I'll go under hardware configuration. In hardware configuration, I'll scroll down. So I've got two disks that I want to show. First is my my boot disk. And so this one is not the shared one. You can't share the boot disk across multiple VMs.
Okay. Right?
So every VM will have their own boot VHD. Now, if I switch over now to the SCSI adapter, I've got one device attached. And then here, I don't have it checked, but all I would need to do to tell VMM, hey, when you deploy a service instance, this service tier or the machine tier needs to have this VHD shared across all the VMs, I would essentially click on this checkbox. And VMM would then know when I deploy this, it's got to be shared across all the VMs in a service tier.
So within a guest cluster, essentially we're running an application within VMs that's highly available. Let's say we're running a SQL server inside VMs. Now that SQL server is going to fail over between those two VMs. And what we're basically saying is this shared VHD is where we store that SQL's application data. That way SQL can see the application from VM1, SQL can see its application data from VM2. So essentially, we're creating shared storage in the virtual layer, but using a file-based system as opposed to a traditional LUN, right?
That's correct. And especially okay. If you see what we have invested with Scale-Out File Server, you want the abstraction where you're only going to have SMB3 as a protocol in between your Scale-Out File Server and your Hyper-V servers. So you don't have the option of a LUN. You don't have a Fibre Channel or iSCSI. You essentially only have the ability to say, here's a VHD file. Now I'm going to present that to my VMs.
Great. And again, you know, to emphasize your point, you don't use the boot volume with that. Each VM has its own boot volume. Again, this is that shared information that both of those VMs can see to use those cluster concepts for failover.
That's correct.
Always accessing the data. Great.
Great.
Now, final thing that I know we wanted to cover is talking about ODX. Give us an overview. What is this, and why should people really want to invest in this as they're thinking about future hardware acquisitions?
Okay, actually, the best way to show you is via demo.
Okay,
so let me switch over to that part of the demo here. Close all
now, first
this.
Of all, could you just define ODX for us? Give us the basic overview.
Sure.
What does this capability do?
Okay, so ODX, or offloaded data transfer, is a capability in Windows that allows you to offload the copy of a file from Volume 1 or Share 1 to Volume 2 or Share 2. And where all the data is actually moved by the array.
So traditionally, if I copied from 1 to 2 and I did it from a server, we would copy into the memory of the server and then back to the other disk. So essentially, we had to use that server as an intermediary and whatever networks that server had access to.
That's correct.
And you're saying we can skip that server and basically directly talk between the fabric layer, the two storage
right.
arrays.
So the two main advantages is that you don't need a network. I'm sorry, you don't need to use capacity on the network to actually transfer the file. And the array gets to implement the best way to copy that data. So, for example, the demo I have here is with the NetApp FAS 2240. This one actually, it won't have to copy the data over. It actually just creates pointers to the data.
So it just redirects the access points.
Exactly.
So you can deploy in a matter of seconds now?
Well, let's see. So let me kick off this demo.
Okay.
And so the first thing I'm going to do is kick off a bits-based deployment. This is the traditional deployment that we have in VMM today. And so what you're going to notice as the transfer warms up, on the left hand side, on this side I've got the library server, right? This is my source where the VHD resides. On this side I've got the Hyper-V server. So I'm actually using network on both sides.
Okay.
Right? And these servers are physically next to each other. Okay, but I'm still using network capacity. So you can imagine in a data center when I want to deploy to many servers, maybe over larger distances, right? You're mm-hmm. you're essentially using capacity on both sides. So I'm going to cancel that transfer. I only got around 7% of the file. It's a 7 gig file, right? So I didn't get much done. Now I'm going to switch over to an ODX deployment. So the key piece I want you to notice once that starts up is that the network actually doesn't get consumed.
Okay. So instead of seeing these peaks at what 50, what is that? 50 megabytes a second, 50%
yep.
usage. We shouldn't see any here or very little.
None.
Let's take All a right. look.
So let me check the job to see if this has started. So this is still warming up the VM creation. So at this point in the demo, now the ODX deployment has kicked in. So it's the same template, same VHD, same library server, same Hyper-V host. And that's the transfer. There's essentially no network
transfer.
Wow,
you can barely see anything through there. That's
so
pretty amazing.
If I look at the job view and I click on the virtual machine job, Let me expand this. You're going to see exactly what I'm talking about. So you're essentially getting about 500 megabytes a second of transfer. So in the same amount of time that I copied 7% of the file using bits, not only do I get the entire VHD over, but you're going to see in a few seconds that now I can start customization of the VM in the same amount of time. So those are the advantages that you get with offloaded data transfer.
That's really good. And I mean, most of the major hardware providers now include this as part of their nice storage array. So we definitely want to encourage our customers starting to think about new hardware, refresh cycle, definitely try to find hardware that has ODX to just speed up the deployment, simplify your management as well.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much. This has been very informative, a great demo. And I'm sure people have other questions. So where can they go to learn more about these storage enhancements in VMM 2012R2?
So there's a lot of great blogs from the Windows Server team. So example, Jose Beretta, he's a PM in the file server team. So I would look at his blog. Also, the Windows Server blog in general we'll have a lot of great upcoming releases on new blogs for all the R2 technologies. So the Windows Server blog is another great place to look. My personal blog, I do blog as well. So it's blogs.technet.com/HectorL.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Really informative. Really appreciate it. And make sure that you download the evals and continue to check out the Microsoft Virtual Academy for more training. Thanks a lot, Hector.
Thank you.
All right, well, I hope you enjoyed that interview. What I really found interesting about that was just the way we're really trying to simplify the management, reduce complexity of having multiple vendors, streamline operations, streamline deployment, and ultimately make your life easier. So I hope you learned a lot about VMM and our enhancements to storage. Remember, you can download the evals from the TechNet Eval Center and learn more, again, on the Microsoft Virtual Academy. But David, where could people go to send us feedback?
Well, yeah, I mean, we have a lot of different options for you to give us feedback. You know, you can go to our Facebook page. We recently updated that, so definitely join that, like us, and give us feedback there. You could also send us an email, edge@microsoft.com. That's another option for you. And, you know, of course, comment on the video as well. Now, yeah, just comment down below on this one if you have something specific to that episode. But we're always looking for feedback, comments, things you would love to see. It's like, hey, you want to go see this program manager or know about this feature? As long as it's related to something IT that we focus on, we'll take a look at
Sorry,
it.
Sorry, no Xbox demos here.
No, yeah. Cool.
All right, with that, thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.